please the court, my name is Eric Cardall, and I represent the plaintiffs in the case, the appellants. This case involves a clash of democratic values, the right to vote without interference, which is well known, and also in Minnesota Statute 204C1D10, which we don't contest, and the right to wear apparel anywhere without government censorship. The standard of review in this case is de novo. The lower court dismissed our complaint, and the court should review the complaint liberally and take the alleged facts as true. What we're challenging? We're challenging Minnesota Statute 211B.11, which prohibits, I'll just read it, a political badge, political button, or other political insignia may not be worn at or about the polling place on primary election day. From this statute came a process, which is reflected in the Mansky affidavit, where Mr. Mansky reviewed, in one instance, whether the election integrity button was political, and then another instance, whether Tea Party T-shirts are political. In this process, he reviewed the political positions of politicians who were running for office, Secretary of State candidate Severson and gubernatorial candidate Tom Emmer. In that process, he reviewed their websites. Then he reviewed my client's organizational positions to see if there was a confluence of those interests. Then he deemed it political. Then there is an election day policy written up for Hennepin County and Ramsey County reflecting that determination that it was political. There is a reference made to Tea Party T-shirts and election integrity buttons in that election day policy.
Also moveon.com, I understand.
That's correct. But there are also a fourth aspect, and that is the election day activities. So you have a statute, you have a state process, you have an election day policy, and that policy was actually carried out on election day. And so my clients and members of my associational clients were asked to disrobe, that is to take off their button, or to take off their T-shirt. Others were chilled into not wearing their buttons or their T-shirts at all. This was an interference with their free speech rights as they went into the polling place. Now, as I've described the process that we're challenging, there's a dispute over what that means. On my client's behalf, we believe this is content-based, viewpoint discriminatory, targeting ideological messages on T-shirts of different groups and people, and it's just plain old censorship of apparel, that is passive political speech. On the other side, the defendants say, but we ban all political messaging, and it's viewpoint neutral. On the doctrinal issues, there is some confusion. Our position is it really doesn't matter if it's a public forum or a non-public forum because we have violated viewpoint neutrality, and so exacting scrutiny applies.
On the face of it, how is it not viewpoint neutral on the face of the statute and the policy?
In other cases, Your Honor, the government has taken upon itself, because of the many definitions of political, to limit the definition to the purpose, you know, that clash of democratic values I indicated, and that is campaigning. So, for example, in the Marlin case, it was limited to campaign activities. The Burson case was campaign activities within the 100 feet of the polling place. So there's no limitation with respect to the definition of political. And, of course, a specific targeting of my—
That might support a vagueness argument, but it doesn't, on the face of it, it doesn't say, political badges of you know, the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. I mean, it doesn't take a position on the face of it, does it?
Yes, but it's been interpreted in this case to include ideological messaging. The T-shirts, which are copy of on the website, includes ideological messages like liberty and freedom. Those statutes, which you would be referring to, Your Honor, would be limiting it to partisanship, something directly connected to the ballot. So when my candidates come in with a T-shirt saying freedom, the position of the defendant can't be, because my clients are members of the Tea Party wearing the freedom T-shirt, that's not permitted. And maybe there's a little logo, Tea Party T-shirt or something, as indicated in the appendix. But these statutes are not limited to political messaging. Political is so broadly defined by the interpretation given by the state that it includes ideological messaging, and that is not connected to any compelling state purpose at the to narrow speech at the polling place.
Okay, I'll concede that it includes ideological, but again, where on the face of it is it taking a position that's not viewpoint neutral? You know, in other words, you say freedom, but somebody who came in wearing a T-shirt that said oppression would fit the same mold on the face of it, wouldn't it?
Yes, Your Honor, but the free speech, my client's free speech rights are specific to my client. I mean, my client has free speech rights, and that's the nexus of the free speech rights. So my client is coming in with ideological messaging, and what we're challenging is the statute includes that messaging.
Okay, so I'm just trying to understand why you think it's not viewpoint neutral.
It's content based, and it's been interpreted by the state of Minnesota, the Secretary of State, Hennepin County, and Ramsey County to ban my client's ideological messaging, and that is a violation of my client's First Amendment rights. And if we look at the process by which that statute was implemented by the government officials in this case, involved reviewing my client's political views, reviewing the apparel, reviewing candidates running for office to see if there's a confluence of those interests.
Counsel, suppose they'd banned anything that's got a political view.
Then that would be similarly unconstitutional because it's not connected to the compelling state purpose. As I mentioned, my client doesn't dispute that the right to vote without interference exists, but expressing a political view on a T-shirt in a passive way doesn't affect that compelling state interest. So under restrictions...
Well, if they had the governor's name there, X for governor, governor's in the ballot, they can surely ban that, right?
We would not concede that without...
You're kidding me.
Under Tinker, Your Honor...
Burson, how about the Burson case? Don't you think under the Burson case it's a foregone conclusion that if it says X for governor and the governor's name the ballot, they can ban that from the polling place? If they can ban a sign 100 feet away, surely they can ban the shirt in the middle of the polling place, huh?
There's a difference between passive and active campaign.
No. Suppose the sign is passive. You know, people put up signs, at least in some states, they put up signs 100 feet from the polling place. That's a passive sign.
But
T-shirt's passive.
Your Honor, it's been placed. And so, and the person can remove, and it's there. A piece of apparel is a part of a person. Huh. There might be different free speech interests there. Requiring someone to disrobe when a T-shirt is not posing a interference with someone else's voting rights seems to be more intrusive.
So you won't even agree that the state can ban the T-shirt that says X for governor when X is on the ballot? Seems like they can easily do that. That's Burson, right?
It's not our case, but I understand, yes, that's Burson.
Okay.
And so the broader under
So what lesson do you take from Burson? Suppose you get strict scrutiny, and suppose it's Burson's standard. Under Burson, can't they still ban this stuff in the polling place?
No, because there's a distinction between Burson in this case because there's a more limited definition of political in that statute. And that statute...
I don't know. It starts out with a poster. Sign or campaign material. It does have campaign on the first two.
It limits here, and I'm reading it, the statute, the display of campaign posters, signs, or other campaign materials, distribution of campaign materials, and solicitation of votes for or against any person or political party or position question are prohibited. So that's different than ideological messaging.
It's a little narrower, right?
Yes, it's much, much narrower, considering the facts of this case.
Well, I guess it depends on how you define the word campaign.
But it doesn't mention T-shirts here. It would depend on how you define campaign and materials.
I guess you could wear a poster, but we won't go there.
Right. With an election integrity button, it's a far stretch to say that's a campaign when it relates directly to the operation of the election, for example. There are two sets. But it seems if we do get the strict scrutiny analysis, I mean, you can get it in two ways, and this addresses the doctrinal issue, is that, you know, it's a public forum, strict scrutiny applies. If it's not a public forum, even Scalia's concurring in the judgment, he indicates it still has to be viewpoint neutral. We assert that it's not viewpoint neutral, so we still have strict scrutiny with respect to that claim. And then the Kennedy view, the concurrence in the reasoning and the vote, is that it doesn't matter because the content-based restriction, which we believe we've shown through our four-step analysis. In the end, whichever view the court takes on the statute, you still have the statute, the process, the election day policy, and then my client's rights to wear these buttons and these T-shirts interfered with. And at a Rule 12 stage, I think we should be able to develop the record to see exactly what process, the more details about the process. We have had no depositions, no discovery, and there might be more details about how targeted this became.
You have a 26-page amended complaint. Is there a vagueness and overbreadth challenge somewhere in that complaint?
We're challenging the statute in all respects. That's correct. And with respect to this doctrinal issue, you know, we have the equal protection, we've got the unconstitutionally overbroad vagueness issues. Our constitutional challenge, even despite the doctrinal issue of first impression, we do have these Tinker cases where in a school district forum, and that minors have fewer rights presumably than adults wearing stuff, apparel, that the U.S. Supreme Court has found in the lower courts, armbands protesting the war can be worn, Confederate flags can be worn, Jeff Foxworthy redneck jokes can be worn, T-shirts critical of President Bush can be worn, NRA shooting camp T-shirts can be worn, armbands protesting the dress code can be worn. And so there's, even if it's a limited, somehow limited, we have all this doctrinal development, 30, 40 years in the U.S. Supreme Court regarding free speech in a school context. And if those, even if that lesser standard were...
Well, suppose you don't use the schools as... You began this. I can't resist. Suppose you don't use the schools as analogy. Suppose you use the courtroom as analogy. We can ban anything from the courtrooms, right? Like a shirt that says, "Uck the draft," or something like that?
Presumably subject to the First Amendment.
Well, the Cohen versus California, I think, right, is the name of the case.
Right. So I would guess that, yes, that would be under some sort of vulgar exception. But here, you know, T-shirts like Liberty and Freedom and Election Integrity Buttons, Please ID Me, I don't think the court would, just like we thought when we started, the state wouldn't ban these things because they're so innocuous. They wouldn't interfere with your court proceeding, the questioning of me and back and forth, just like with respect to voting. Such T-shirts and buttons don't interfere with that process, whereas campaigning, which we've conceded, would interfere with that because you're approaching someone and interfering with their process to vote. Let me reserve the rest of the time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Cardle. Morning, Mr. Rogan.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Dan Rogan. I'm from the Hennepin County Attorney's Office, and I'll be arguing on behalf of all of the defendants. This case, I think, two points I want to make right off. First of all, the court kind of was questioning, Mr. Cardell kind of got off on why we had the policy at all and why it mentions the Election Integrity Watch and why it mentions the Tea Party. It mentions them, especially on behalf of Hennepin County, because they sued us, asking the court to temporarily restrain us from prohibiting that. We had a temporary restraining hearing before Judge Erickson. The day before the election, we had a long hearing. It took all morning. And after that, she said that she would like to see a written a policy comporting with what she had described, and that's what we did. So the idea that we were targeting them because we wanted to target them is simply not supported by the record. The record is clear that the reason that they were brought to our attention is because initially they went to Mr. Mansky, who's the Ramsey County election official, and then subsequently they sued everybody, and so we had to respond to it. So I think that to the extent that that's an argument for why they believe that it's viewpoint-based, I think is something that the record doesn't support.
Do you agree they have an as-applied challenge here?
Yes, I do agree that they've both challenged the this facially and as applied to them through the Election Day policy.
Do you believe you ban T-shirts that say anything on them in the polling places?
No, we do not ban T-shirts that say anything. I think what we ban is what we've described in our policy, which...
Well, you say and so on. You say Tea Party, MoveOn.org, and so on. I don't know what and so on covers.
Well, if you go to the beginning of that, it talks about how that election judges have authority to ban what is political. Examples are, but are not limited to. And what we were trying to do there was to provide some specific examples of materials that would be banned.
What if it says jobs now? What were they to do on if it says jobs now?
I think it depends on the context you're on, right?
No, I'm sorry. The T-shirt says jobs now. This is an easy question.
Jobs now, I don't think would be banned.
Okay. What if it says no jobs now?
I don't think that would be banned, Your Honor. I don't think liberty would be banned. I think what was banned here, what we described, was Tea Party apparel, not something that just said liberty, but something that described the Tea Party, which at that time was a well-known and still is a well-known political movement. And the same thing, the MoveOn.org, which Your Honor, you mentioned earlier, was something that also has clearly identified with an ideological bent. And the
what did their T-shirts say, MoveOn.org?
They would say MoveOn.org on them.
What if they said something else?
If they were clearly identified with MoveOn.org and they said MoveOn.org with something else on there, then that would be banned, Your Honor. That would be the intent here.
You have a disclaimer law in this state on T-shirts? You know what I mean by disclaimer? You have
yes,
to list on your T-shirt?
I don't think there's a disclaimer required on your T-shirts, Your Honor.
I bet not.
But, Your Honor, I think that we're losing the point here. The idea here is that we're talking about a non-public forum. The polling place. The polling place is designed specifically for people to go in to have a moment where they get away from all the electioneering, all the campaigning, and can go in and peacefully vote, making their own decision. And what the plaintiffs are asking for, and what their specifically their Election Integrity Watch buttons were for, was to have a campaign inside the polling place.
Well, why is ID.me on the list?
Please ID me is on the list because, first of all, because they sued us, and secondly, because they had a campaign that was designed to disrupt the polling place by having people not wear these buttons casually because they wanted to wear an election integrity button, but to wear them specifically to the polling place so that they could go in and encourage people to ask them for their ID, which is not required in Minnesota.
So now we've moved from protecting moment of quiet for voters to protecting poll workers. Is that right?
No, Your Honor. I think that's an additional argument. The part of this is that we don't want
people.
Well,
ID.me has nothing to do with issues that have been on the ballot in your elections.
Correct. It was not on the ballot, but it was something that had had been in the public debate in Minnesota. There's currently possibly going to be a constitutional amendment in Minnesota on it. It had been part of the campaign of the Secretary of State, who was on the ballot for the Republican Party.
If it's something that's been of public debate but has nothing to do with the elections that are taking place or the campaigns for those elections, you feel it's still within the authority of the state to prohibit that message?
Yes, Your Honor. The way that we had described it in the policy was issue-oriented material designed to influence or impact voting. And that's what these were clearly designed to do.
Well, ID.me, how is that designed? To impact voting.
Your Honor, it was designed to impact voting because it was identified with partisan candidates who were on the ballot, who were asking for, who part of their platform for election was, if you elect me, I will get us an identification requirement in the election. So it was both that it was identified with candidates and with platforms, and that it was designed to disrupt the polling place.
So what about a T-shirt that says peace? Is that prohibited because Ron Paul advocates pull back of military forces from around the world and not engaging in military activities without a declaration of war?
No, Your Honor. No, I don't think it would. I think it has to be identified with a group or a candidate. And in this case, it was not. It would be the same way as if a candidate had a tagline that they ran on that they used everywhere.
You said it was a matter of public debate. It doesn't have to be a tagline, does it?
Well, no, it can't just be a public debate. It has to be something that's going to influence the election. It's going to influence voters. And so it can't just be a tagline that is not going to – I mean, going back to the issue-oriented materials that are designed to influence or impact voting. And I think, we were
– And wait, you've skipped the wrong bullet. Your last bullet is material promoting a group with a recognizable political view.
Right. You're right, Your Honor. There are two different ones right. that we described.
So you can't put Chamber of Commerce. I work for the Chamber of Commerce. Can't wear that in, right? The Chamber of Commerce has a recognizable political view.
Yes, I think that's right, Your Honor.
Oh, I'm sorry, which one? That you can or can't wear that I work for the Chamber of Commerce?
To the extent that the Chamber of Commerce has T-shirts that they have that identify them as a group that and the Chamber of Commerce mm-hmm. endorses people, I think you're right, Your Honor.
Okay, and anything that has the AFL-CIO logo, you can't wear in there, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Boy, you've got a heck of a dress code going on.
And Your Honor, the intent here is very simple. It's designed for the very small period of time. Hopefully, in Minnesota, you're only in the polling booth for a small period of time to eliminate all of the clutter that goes along with people who want to influence you. And that when you're standing in line to register to vote, when you're walking over to the polling booth, that you're not barraged with additional campaign. Symbols from people that are wearing them, or like you had described, Your Honor, can we ban hats? What if you came in with a sign? What if you came in with a briefcase? My answer to those questions is yes, we can ban them because this is a non-public forum, just like this courtroom is, and that you have the ability, and the state of Minnesota has the ability to control what's in there and to limit it to a non-politicking environment so that people have the ability to vote in peace. And I think that's what Burson talks about. I think that's what the city of Sydney talks about. That's what the district court found. And I think that this case, we're kind of going into many different hypotheticals, and that's fine. But I think what you get down to is the real question is this a what is the – is it content-based? And the answer is yes. And what is the forum? What's the forum analysis? And this is clearly a non-public forum. There's not a single case which...
As a panel, are we compelled by Embry to find that it is a public forum?
No, Your Honor. No, and we discussed that in our brief. The Embry case in dicta, the Embry described a whole host of areas, including the public sidewalk, the entry in, as a designated public forum. And the reason that they did that, I believe, if you read the decision, is that they weren't talking about that area. They were talking about a school that had been designated as a polling place. And somebody wanted to set up, as Judge Benson was saying before, outside the 100-foot area of the polling place, but on the school property. And the question was, can the school ban people from doing that? And the Eighth Circuit said, yes. Yes, you can, because it's non-public over there. And describing... Everywhere else, they described it as a designated public forum. But I think that they were describing that not as a designated public forum where we have to apply strict scrutiny for all of that area, but rather to distinguish it from the non-public forum that was clearly there. I think if you look at the Burson decision, you look at Judge Justice Scalia's decision, and you look at both the dissent and the plurality, all of them say we're not talking about the inside of a polling place. There's not a single case that we've been able to find where a court has said that the inside of a polling place is anything other than a non-public forum.
Has this court said that the way I count the votes in Burson, Kennedy and Scalia each have concurring opinions?
Correct.
Has this court said that we don't look at Scalia's opinion at all in that case? We look only to Kennedy's or the other way around?
No, this court has not said that.
Has any court said that?
No. The only court, there's the California, I think it's the Poindextra case, talks about lining up the votes for what I just described as the inside the polling place. And if you can, Scalia, the plurality, and the dissent in a footnote all say what the dissent says, well, I'm not talking about a polling place, which is obviously a non-public forum. So there they count all eight justices because Justice Thomas.
Yeah, but to get to five, is the narrowest view of the court, has any court said whether it's Kennedy or Scalia you put with the other four?
No. Not that I'm aware of that has come to that point. The courts that cite Burson all cite the plurality. And I think, frankly, I think a lot of courts struggle with the idea that we're going to consider all of this area a public forum, because I think a lot of when you look at it, I think there's a lot of merit to what Justice Scalia described as, yes, it's a public forum some of the time, but on election day, does the entryway to the polling place, just because it happens to be on a sidewalk, is it a public forum at that point? And the answer, I think Justice Scalia would say, is no, it's not.
But he's the only one of that opinion, right?
He is.
Thank you.
Just to touch on one other aspect of this that I think needs to be described is they have both a facial challenge and an as-applied challenge, And I think in the court went through both of those. Judge Erickson did a very nice job of I think giving the benefit of the doubt to what was in the amended complaint, and it wasn't clear, I think, to me, and certainly not to Judge Erickson, that there was a vagueness challenge that was included in the amended complaint, but the court went through the vagueness challenge, and it goes to kind of where we began with this, which is the definition of political. And the court found, and I think this is sound reasoning, is that political can be understood by the common person to describe some of the things that we were talking about. And I think one thing that Judge Erickson didn't describe is the remedy for that is not that you're going to be prosecuted, not that you're going to jail, but that a poll worker will come up to you and say, excuse me, you have a button on. Could you take the button off while you're in the polling place? That's what we're talking about here, and that goes further to the reasonableness here. Because when the court looks at this, the reasonableness, I think, is the forum analysis is what drives this, because the standard really comes down to, is it a reasonable regulation in light of the use of the forum?
But this is a petty misdemeanor.
It can be a petty misdemeanor if in Minnesota, the way that this would be get to a criminal prosecution would first, it would have to go to the Office of Administrative Hearings, which is an administrative body, which would make a determination. And then the Office of Administrative Hearings, if they wanted to, could refer the case back to the county attorney's office.
Could a police officer make an arrest if a police officer is in the poll voting and he sees an offending garment? Could he make an arrest since this is a petty misdemeanor?
I think the exclusive jurisdiction for this is that a complaint has to be brought to the Office of Administrative Hearings. So my answer would be no. I don't believe that's the case. But
at the very least, I think there was indication in the record that names and addresses are taken down so that they can be submitted to the authorities.
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor. That's the same way it is with all incidents that happen in a polling place, is that the elections officials are instructed to allow people to vote, but to take down their name and identifying information so that authorities can deal with it subsequently when we're not dealing with all the incidents that happen.
Counselor, are you saying if there's a fight, a breach of the peace in the middle of the polling place, the officer can't do anything there?
No, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that under this, what the question was is that 211B.11 subdivision 4 has in it a petty misdemeanor remedy. And I believe that for that provision, if you look at the subdivision 1, talks about the way that you the exclusive jurisdiction for that is the Office of Administrative Hearings. So I think that would be where you would have to bring that complaint first. What you're talking about is a disturbing the peace, which is in the regular criminal code. And I think there a police officer could ask somebody to leave, could make an arrest for somebody who's violating that statute.
I hesitate to ask, but I've got to ask: does Minnesota have citizen's arrest for a misdemeanor committed in your presence?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Rogan, one other question. If we accept as true the allegations that Common Cause and Sierra Club voters were unmolested and wearing similar badges, why does the as-applied challenge fail?
Well, Your Honor, I think there's two answers to that. First of all, if you read the complaint, there were many people or at least several people that the plaintiffs identified who wore election integrity or Tea Party apparel and who also were not asked to remove their stuff. So that's number one. Number two is that the defendants who are sued here are the people who made the policy. And in Minnesota, we make the policy. We send it out to the cities to instruct their elections officials, and they are responsible for enforcing it. And in this case, we were very clear about how it should be applied. And to the extent that it wasn't applied consistently, that's something that under Section 1983, Hennepin County and the elections officials that are here can't be held responsible for. Thank you, Your Honor.
How much time does Mr. Cardall have?
2 minutes,
Mr. Cardall.
Your Honor, to respond to Judge Shepard's question, the vagueness issue is raised in paragraph 131, appendix 66, and that relates to the facial challenge. And here the state, and these are very qualified authorities, including the Attorney General, are interpreting the statute for this court, and it's a rare moment of harmony. And so they're saying political includes ideological messaging. And I think the court should defer to these state officials informing the court exactly what political means, leading to this broad ban on ideological messaging, which is, in a sense, a dress code, which is distinguishable from Burson because it didn't get into political apparel such as buttons and T-shirts, didn't get into statements like liberty. In appendix page 71, it appears that the Tea Party T-shirt that says liberty is only banned because underneath it, it says Tea Party Patriots. So if that is targeting, because if it were liberty, well, then that's okay. But if it says Tea Party T-shirt, Tea Party organization underneath, then it's banned. That's selective targeting.
Was one of the logos that was banned, a Tea Party logo, was Don't Tread on Me. Was that one of them?
That's right. And again,
did that have the Tea Party
Yes,
notation with it?
It's the men's.
It simply Don't Tread on Me. Don't me on me.
It said Don't Tread on Me, and then the identification, I believe, is on the back of the T-shirt. That's the men's red Gadsden T-shirt, which comes in different sizes, according to page 71. And the point being that that T-shirt, the front of it, would not be offensive. It's the back of it because it says Tea Party Organization. So it seems like there's an identification of the organization here, an impermissible targeting and as-applied challenge.
Counsel, what do you and your clients think about where we ended up in discussion there, that they're going to prohibit anything that has AFL-CIO or Chamber of Commerce on it? Because they have recognizable political views, too. Do you believe there can be it's kind of like the Ledoux case. Can you believe there can be a complete ban on anything that's got words on it in a polling place?
No, and that's our facial challenge. They have told you that this statute is interpreted under Minnesota ordinary meanings to words as banning all this ideological messaging. You should take them at their word and strike down the statute. And as a final note, my clients wrote a letter to the Secretary of State a few weeks before the election when they saw that the training was going this way, and the note was unresponded to. A plaintiff, Sue Jeffers, wrote a similar note to the Office of the Secretary of State, and it went unresponded to. And so this argument that their statements after the litigation was started should be discounted is the opposite of what this court normally does. After the litigation has started, we pay even more attention to what the government has done. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Cardle. We appreciate your arguments today. It's an interesting case. It'll be submitted, and we'll issue an opinion in due course.